Chapter 4. Crow at the Windowsill. I'm standing in a kitchen that wasn't familiar to me, along with two other men. I didn't know them, but they were not there to hurt me. They stood casually over by the kitchen island in the middle of the room, as I stood opposite of them closer to the window above the sink. In an instant, a crow perched at the windowsill. He looked gnarly with ruffled feathers and emanated an evil intention to harm me. At the sight of him, I became enraged and ran to the drawer in the kitchen island and grabbed the knife. The knife was my mother's that she used for years and refused to get rid of. The knife was old yet sharp and had gray duct tape on the handle keeping the wooden grip sandwiched together. I ran back to the window with determination, to find myself and the bird separated by a bug screen, which just appeared out of thin air. We looked eye to eye, and as we communicated through our spirits, I said to him, "You will never get what you came for." With rage and disappointment, because the crow couldn't enter the kitchen, he extended his talon through the screen, ripping his claw into the bottom of it. I immediately chopped off the crow's leg, and he flew away hurt. I woke up to the sound of the hospital monitors beeping. I was filled with overwhelming fear and anxiety. I needed a second to register that it was just a bad dream. My blood pressure was surely elevated as I felt the veins in my neck thumping. I quickly looked over at my 4-year-old son to make sure he was okay, as he slept along my side in the emergency room. I then turned my head over to the clock on the wall, and it read 2:30 a.m. We had been at the hospital for nearly 6 hours. Earlier that night, I had a very worried feeling about him, as he was weak and had broken blood vessels all over his chest and stomach. They were the kind that looked like those you burst after you vomited with excessive pressure. I was laying on my living room couch when this strong urge came over me to take him to the hospital. My son was laying on the love seat across from me and looked pale and very ill. Every time I glanced over at him, the urge became more intense, as if there was a silent voice in my head shouting, "Go now! Don't trust the diagnosis of tonsillitis that was made 2 weeks ago." It was around 9 p.m. when I told my wife I was taking him to the emergency room. She felt just as concerned as me that evening and for the previous 2 weeks leading up to that night. I jumped off the couch and went out into the fall night to warm up the truck as my wife got our son dressed. I then grabbed my son and strapped him into his booster seat and then hopped behind the wheel. I backed out of my driveway in a hurry and sped to the hospital. On our way to the emergency room, my son did something very scary. He started praying to God. I will never forget the words he uttered that night. "Jesus, please heal me." I couldn't believe he just said that. Those words made matters more alarming, and I tried so hard to dismiss what he said. Doubt and fear began to quickly enter my thoughts of his condition because of the intuition he had to pray for his own healing at 4 years old. I chose to dismiss that it could be anything serious, as I wanted my confidence in God to prevail over those fears. Surely he wouldn't let anything life-threatening happen to my son. Still, I had nervous butterflies in the pit of my stomach. At this point, I felt more seasoned than I ever had with God and didn't think I could actually get any closer to him. He just tested my entire family through my sister's hardship. Surely he wouldn't let anything that evil strike us again, especially to my little boy. Around 3 a.m., the doctor came into the room with his blood work and casually approached the bed where we were laying. "It looks like an infection in his throat," he said, as he started to scribble into his prescription pad an order of antibiotics. I then told him that my son hadn't been feeling well for several weeks and was already on antibiotics. He gave me the prescription anyway, but this time it was for a different variation of the medicine. I requested that his test results be sent over to his primary pediatrician. Then I bundled up my boy in his coat and hat, and we drove home. I pulled into the driveway close to 3:45 a.m., exhausted, but with a nerve-wracking gut feeling about the dream I had in the ER. I opened the back door and undid his seatbelt so I could carry him to his warm bed. I don't think I slept much the rest of the night. I had to be up in an hour and a half for court, as I had a trial to attend. I was in a legal battle for 5 years and had finally made it to trial. That morning was the final day of court proceedings. With almost no rest, I awoke from about 15 minutes of total sleep to that aggravating beeping sound from my alarm clock. I opened my eyelids and immediately noticed that sandpaper feeling on my eyeballs every time I blinked. I knew it was going to be a long day. I forced my way to the shower as I needed to get dressed and hit the road for about an hour drive to the federal courthouse in White Plains. As I was putting on my suit and tie, I started to tell my wife about the dream I had in the hospital and that I was still afraid. She just listened but didn't say much. I completely dismissed that this was a warning dream about my son and decided that God was trying to tell me something about the jury decision that I should be getting that day. I got in my SUV and started my drive down to White Plains. The entire drive I was praying for God's peace and victory over the uneasy feeling I had. I made it to the federal courthouse by 8 a.m. and underwent an hour of the trial before the closing statements were presented. These would leave the jury with their final impression in order to make their decision. We waited for nearly 3 hours before the jury came back with a verdict. This was the moment that the last 5 years of my life came to. Fate in the hands of 12 strangers. Finally, the judge entered the courtroom with a piece of paper in his hand that read the ruling. He sat down and started by clearing his throat and sipping some water from the glass that had been in front of him all morning. Then he announced a verdict in my favor. For that very brief moment, I felt joy. Then my phone started to ring as I was saying goodbye to my attorneys and thanking them for the fine work they had done. It was my wife, and she had terror in her voice. She told me the blood work from the ER was received by our son's pediatrician, and they wanted to see him right away. I told my wife to take him to his pediatrician immediately, and that it would be about 45 minutes before I could get to them. I ran out of the courthouse like someone was chasing me with a machete. I didn't feel good about this, and began grappling with God about the possible severity of the diagnosis. As I was sprinting across the street to get to my car, the most beautiful and vibrant double rainbow appeared right before my eyes, and the sight of it put me somewhat at ease. I accepted anything that looked like confirmation in that moment of anguish. The entire drive back, I was praying with every ounce of energy that I could drum up from within my soul. Finally, I pulled into the parking lot and saw my father and brother outside the doctor's office. They had accompanied my wife and son. That made me worry even more. I thought, what did they know that I didn't? Is it that serious that they drove out to his doctor's appointment? I didn't know what to think. My face became flushed as I dashed into the waiting room where my wife and son were sitting in anxiety. I sat next to my wife and grabbed my son, putting him on my lap, and we waited to be called by his doctor. Roughly 10 minutes went by before one of the nurses called his name and brought us to a room in the back, shutting the door behind her as she exited. Now we were waiting for the doctor to come in. A part of me was wishing that she'd never walk into the room because I didn't want to hear what she had to say about what was wrong with him. When his doctor finally entered the room, she quickly went over to my son and started taking off his shirt to get a closer look at the marks on his body. After a couple of minutes, she started talking about how she thinks it's a disorder called immune thrombocytopenic purpura, or ITP for short. This is a low platelet disorder which causes bleeding and would explain the broken vessels that she was analyzing. I didn't believe she was telling me the whole truth. It felt like she was trying to soften the blow and wanted us to hear it from someone else besides her. Having been our pediatrician for many years, this seemed to be as hard for her as it was going to be for us. This uneasy feeling made the experience even more terrifying. His doctor was adamant that we take him to WMC immediately to their pediatric unit. I almost lost it due to the horrible experience my family had had with this hospital and their doctors who nearly killed my sister. I insisted on Columbia's Presbyterian in New York City, as I was more comfortable with that medical facility. However, his pediatrician insisted on going to WMC, so I reluctantly took him there because I didn't want to waste any more time. I said to my wife, "Let's get him properly diagnosed, and if we needed to transfer him, we would." We arrived at WMC in about 38 minutes, as I drove over the speed limit with no care of getting stopped by the police. We were followed by my dad, brother, and my wife's family, who were just as concerned. We quickly checked him in and started the process all over again as we waited for his name to be called. Slowly, other family members started to arrive at the emergency room. There must have been about 20 people between my wife's side and mine. I became more panicked to see everybody there. I knew they felt the worry that I had, and that made it more difficult to stay positive and hopeful. I felt they all knew something I didn't, even though we were all waiting for the same thing, diagnosis. Don't get me wrong, I love my family and appreciate their support, but in that moment, my mind was wrestling in the spiritual realm, and anything that could add fear did. I felt like my doubts in God's protection were coming to the surface, and I began to think of the worst-case scenarios. Several hours had passed, and dusk arrived as we remained waiting for his blood work to come back from the lab. I paced back and forth in the emergency room, mumbling under my breath, outcries to God. Finally, the doctor came back to the room we were in and asked my wife and I to sit down, that she needed to talk to us. My father and brother realized that the doctor was in the room discussing my son's condition and immediately headed over to hear what she had to say. "I want you to understand that this is totally curable," the doctor said. My heart sank and a tingly feeling ran through my body as if electricity ran through my entire being. Once I heard that phrase, my heart started to race like never before, and my mouth became very dry. I really didn't know what she was going to say next. I couldn't even comprehend a diagnosis as severe as the one she was about to tell us. She gave us the same diagnosis my sister got a year earlier. As soon as I heard the word leukemia come out of her mouth, I lost it completely, and in the most rage I ever felt, I punched a hole in the wall above the bed where my son and I sat. What this doctor just told us was my worst fear come true. I started screaming at God, "Again? Really?" My wife's face drained of its color and she broke down in tears as she grabbed our son and held him tightly in her arms, barely able to keep herself upright. Due to my commotion, security immediately ran into the room and escorted me outside the hospital. My heart had just been ripped out of my chest with no mercy, and I felt that killing me would be the least God could do to spare me from this experience. The police ended up coming to the hospital because of my uproar and took over babysitting me from the hospital security guards outside the ER. There were many people around me trying to calm me down, but everything they said went on deaf ears because my attention was to God. I completely ignored my family and the police officers who were trying to calm me down. With tears in my eyes directed towards the heavens, I argued with God. I never felt so disappointed in him. I kept shouting, "Haven't I done everything you wanted me to do? Haven't I been obedient to you? I changed my life for you and put my trust in you. This is how you reward me? You could have stopped this. Why? Just tell me, why did you allow this to happen? Wasn't my sister enough?" The officers who had been alarmed became compassionate. I could tell they were holding back their tears. The female officer almost gave in and broke down. Her facial expressions couldn't hide her empathy for me. The male officer kept his hands on my shoulders, trying to remain professional and not hug me, saying anything he could think of that would help me. The officer's entire demeanor changed from when they first arrived, after hearing me cry out to God. They went from warning me that I could be arrested to trying to comfort me. They felt sympathetic to the agonizing pain that I felt. In the middle of my outcry, one of the registered nurses, who happened to be a Jewish man wearing a yarmulke, came to talk to me and the officers. He told us that they were not pressing charges for the damaged wall, and that they understood what I was going through. He said it would be okay and everything will work itself out. I offered to pay for the wall, but he refused and let me go back to my newest reality. In the midst of this hurt and anger, my father hugged me and was crying on my shoulder. He was squeezing me with the most compassionate hug he had ever given me. He was the only person there that night who knew the exact pain I was going through. I could never forget that moment of love that he gave me, for he was the only person that stood out to me from the crowd. Throughout my dad's hug, I continued to shout at God for what felt like the ultimate betrayal. In a flash, an overwhelming feeling of peace came over me during this chaos, as if a legion of angels came to my rescue. The Holy Spirit had started to turn up the heat on me, a baptism under fire. I started to feel His peace in a way I never had before. The feeling was so strange, an almost out-of-body experience. My voice felt like it was being silenced to my ears only. I couldn't hear anything I was saying. I immediately wrestled with myself after the peace of God came upon me. I started to feel guilt for this new peaceful feeling. My soul was being dragged into a tug of war between God and the devil. My humanity began to feel horrible for not being worried about my son anymore, and I questioned whether or not I loved my boy. I felt a good father would be genuinely outraged at that moment and not feel peace. It was as if my worrying and shouting were for no reason. It was as if this wasn't actually happening. At the time, I didn't really understand what was taking place. I was super distraught and confused. This internal conflict between my three-dimensional human thought process and the truth of the spirit realm was turning into an all-out war. I spent the night in the hospital room next to my wife and son, crying myself to sleep. At 7 a.m., I awoke as if someone threw a cold glass of water on my face. My eyes just opened with no warning, and I felt my blood pressure build as I got up to my feet from my green visitor's couch next to the hospital bed. I quickly looked around to assure myself that I was in the right place and that the night before had actually happened. My wishful thinking quickly came to a dreadful certainty that I was about to experience one of the worst nightmares a parent can face. I gazed at my wife and son, who were still sleeping, and I broke down in tears, quietly. My eyes were so watery, I barely saw anything in front of me as I stumbled out of the room into the bench just outside the hospital. There, as I sat by myself, I lost it completely and started to cry uncontrollably, as if I was a child who lost a parent at the park. The scene of a grown man crying in despair, accompanied by agony, isn't a pleasant one to watch. I kept my head tucked between my legs, facing the ground, as I rested my elbows on my knees so I would not be seen by people walking by. Although I was scared and upset with God, I still had a sense of silent peace that would come upon me every so often. After an hour, I started walking back to the room with puffy red eyes, wearing the suit from the day before, and looking like I just got hit by a bus. I opened the door slowly because I did not want to wake them out of their sleep. I knew that we had a long day ahead of us since the night before didn't provide any rest. However, they were both awake. With a determined tone, I told my wife, "I'm getting him out of here today and taking him to Memorial Sloan Kettering." I started the phone calls immediately. The first was to his primary pediatrician, demanding that she write up a referral to the physicians at Sloan. I made it a point that my son would not get treated at WMC, as I had no confidence in their ability to resolve his issue. They had nearly killed my sister a year ago. Between the going back and forth from his doctor and Sloan, I was able to get the two connected and obtain confirmation from Sloan that they accepted his doctor's referral promptly. They had a room for him available, and they were expecting his arrival in a few hours. I immediately took this information to the on-call physician at WMC and informed her that we were transferring my son out of there and over to Sloan, and that she needed to start the paperwork involved right away. If you thought I was angry before when I punched a hole in the wall of the emergency room, I was beyond angry now. I envisioned myself throwing that doctor, who started to resemble something demonic trying to stop his transfer out of their death chamber, out of the window. I didn't actually do it, I just felt like it. When she told me, "Since he's a minor, we have to keep him here, I can't administer the transfer," I replied with a voice that showed no humanity, accompanied by a death stare. "I will take him out of here with or without your paperwork. I refuse to let you or anyone in this hospital treat him. What part of Sloan Kettering is waiting for him, didn't you understand? His name is in their system, and they have a bed for him, so please, let's not complicate this process. My son is not your guinea pig. This hospital nearly killed my sister who had the same disease." She answered, "Okay, relax, please. Have them send over documentation that they're receiving him as a patient, and I will administer the transfer." I'm sure she felt intimidated by me, as I had no limits when it came to my son. I wasn't going to let WMC or that doctor dictate my boy's life or put the hospital's best financial interest on my family's back. I was traumatized by their ethics, and they would have had to restrain me in a cell for the rest of my life with a 1 million man army to keep him under their care. Without wasting time, I took their fax number and got to work. Within 2 hours, my son was in his booster seat in the back of the SUV, and I was zigzagging in and out of traffic on the FDR on our way to Sloan. We looked like a car parade with all the family members who were following us on the highway. They were just as scared as my wife and I were, and wanted to support us during this most traumatizing moment of our life. This was just the beginning of a long road ahead of me. This ordeal was my graduation from junior high school, and I was about to enter high school of the Military Academy of Spiritual Warfare. The next 5 years became like boot camp for me as I learned how to truly fight and win.